that is a ringing endorsement for what's going on across the game in Scotland at the moment, I would say.
Sports fans, you join us live for a slightly different recording time today, folks. We're going to try it a little bit earlier in the day. I'm joined, as always, by co-host and friend Pierre in the capital. How are things, mate?
Very good, Liam. Do you know the funny thing about podcasting is that people probably don't give a flying fuck if we've recorded this at lunchtime rather than the evening, because they're listening to it at their own time. But it's great for us because I feel more awake than doing this at 10:30 at night, and kind of coordinating in tune with your child's and working responsibilities. But yes, I'm in a chipper mood, using my lunch break to speak to you, Liam, about Scottish cricket. Always lovely. How are you?
Mate, no complaints. 49, Pete. That was a bit of a wobble on 49. Have you ever been up? Have you been up the dizzy heights with 49 with a bat before?
I have a few times, not many. Every time, right? This is weird. I've not got many 50s, but every time, all the grounds I've got 50s at, which is only a few, they've had the scoreboard with your personal score kind of ticking over, right? And I'll be counting when you get to about 45, knowing, right, I need five more runs here or whatever. And every time, like the scorer, because you just never trust scorers, right? All of a sudden, you know you've got those five runs, and yet it still shows like 49. You're like, what's going on? I know I'm on 51. What are you like? Why have you given the guy, the non-striker's end, my runs? I'm left-handed and look like not a batsman, whereas he does. You know what I mean? The only 100 I ever got, I got bowled, and I knew I'd got the 100. I knew I was on 101, but it still showed 99 on the bloody on the scoreboard. So yeah, it is a nervous time, 49, but not, hopefully not for us. Have you ever been on 49, Liam?
Once. Yeah, I think the highest score ever was 88. So I must have been on nearly 49. But yeah,
hey, who was that for?
That was for Strathay back in the day against Strathairn at Ducat Park. Yeah, Strathairn, sadly no longer. One of the clubs that kind of was amalgamated in with Perthshire to create Perth Ducat.
Ducat Park's a lovely ground, one of my favourites.
A lovely day. It was a really nice day. And I remember I smashed one at point. Smashed. Yeah. And it stuck. So I had to go off on 88. But
Were you on the top pitch or the bottom pitch?
Bottom pitch, mate. Bottom pitch, and I batted there with my brother that day, who actually got 50, and then I ran him out.
Awkward.
Not great, but
your lanky brother should always be getting in.
Oh, definitely. Halcyon days, mate. Halcyon days. Should we talk some cricket, mate?
Yeah, let's do. Well, yeah, absolutely. That's what we're
here.
We're obviously.
Starting to take shape now, isn't it? Cricket Scotland, or certainly the organisation, seems to have appointed and held various EGMs, and we seem to have a board and all these new people involved with Scottish cricket. So we'll start right at the very top with Pete Fitzboyden's successor, permanent successor, but Trudy Lindblad. I don't know if I've said that properly. What are you going? Did you pronounce it Lindblad? Yeah,
that's how I would pronounce it, Trudy Lindblad. Yeah, I think, you know, this was obviously an appointment that was made back actually in October, but probably kind of slipped under the radar because, if we're being brutally honest, for the last wee while, a lot of the rhetoric out of Cricket Scotland, people have been wanting to bash it, people have been wanting to sort of make criticism of any news item, whether it be attempted positive or negative, but this is wholly positive, hence why it probably didn't get as much airtime as it should have done. And obviously, I know we're reflecting on this, you know, 4 or 5 months on, but it is a great appointment. I mean, Peter Fitzboyden, I know that me and you Both went to those kind of those meetings that were at the tail end of last summer in respective locations, and he came across as an incredibly impressive individual, and holding the fort and steadying the ship as a chief executive. I see he's gone on to become the chief executive of Sussex Cricket Club, which is you know, quite an appointment for them. So I expect them to move in the right direction. But Trudy Dinblade, I think, is a fine appointment. You know, looking at her pedigree as being somebody who has been involved in World Cycling Championships, for example, has a background in cricket, in Australian cricket, events management in the 2007 Cricket World Cup, which was obviously in the West Indies. I mean, admittedly, that was, you know, a bit of a clunky World Cup, but, you know, a number of years in this sports administration space. So I think it's a really exciting appointment. There's only so much you can tell with a CEO, but for me, this doesn't strike me as being somebody who's controversial, who's come from a background where individuals have said, oh, you know, she did X or Y wrong in this place. Every article that you read about the impact that she's had has been incredibly positive. And so it's quite exciting. I don't know how you feel about it, Liam.
Yeah, absolutely, Pete. She seemed to be the standout candidate from all the digging that I've done. Obviously, you've touched on the kind of large scale event management that she seems to have real good experience in. Obviously, another thing as well is the World Cycling Championships were in Scotland, so she'll have a good knowledge of already about the country and kind of the politics and what goes on in sport in Scotland. So that's a good start for her, and obviously they are kind of underpinned by experience in Australian cricket. So yeah, really, really, really pleased with that appointment. I think it's, you know, it's something to be proud of. I think as well, Scotland have obviously in the last few years had women involved at the helm. Sue Strachan was obviously involved as well as a chair. Was she a chair, Pete, rather than a CEO?
Or a chair, one of the two.
Yeah. So. Yeah, brilliant. Good to see, and hopefully it hits the ground running, because I think she must start pretty much now. I think it was early 2024. Was the starting point.
I believe so. Do you know, I think in general, based on all the noise that's happened in Cricket Scotland over the last couple of years, it's a bit like a good referee potentially. Good referee is sometimes somebody you don't notice too much, right? Okay. Now, it's not to say, you know, we don't want to be promoting the game and developing the game, but if a CEO is doing a good job, they're probably, and they're a humble individual who's making a positive impact, then ideally we're not seeing too much of Trudy in a way, so that she can go kick on and do a good job. And just on that, on the World Cycling Championship, of course it was in Scotland. It went practically past the end of my road, actually, in Edinburgh. So a big fan of Trudy's, if she had anything to do with that event, Matt, because I got to see all these famous cyclists go past practically past my house, which was
at a rate of knots a bit, Peter, but they're fast enough.
It was about the first, it was like the road race, and it was like the first kilometre of it, because it obviously finished in Glasgow, but it started in Edinburgh. So they were just sort of going along at a pace that was far quicker than anything I could ever cycle. But Liam, I know you're more of a cyclist, so you know, maybe a speed.
I know a few of my friends attended like probably the finishing stages of that event, and like it was in Glasgow City Centre, wasn't it? And obviously some of the hills from a few nights out, I can remember walking there up them. It must have been a tricky finish for some of the cyclists. But yeah, good to see, mate. Good to see, and kind of more for the sports fans. It seems like an EGM was held. Because at one point we had, from what I can see, the Cricket Scotland board and some kind of council who was running alongside it almost to assist with decisions, etc. And from the EGM, it's now come together and there's one single decision-making board, which from reading, it seemed to be that was a recommendation of one of the governance reviews, was to have one overarching kind of controlling board for cricket in Scotland. So that's another kind of recommendation that's been met. That was not in the, I don't think that was in the Changing the Boundaries report, but this was in a governance review, which I think was separate. But yeah, so we've got our cricket Scotland board. I don't know if you've had a look at that, Pete, to see who sits on the board. Do you know any of these people?
By the gift of the internet, it's currently loading on my other page just now. I think in general, looking at, you know, there's a new chair, Wilf Walsh, for example. My understanding is I see that Jamie Cox is an independent non-exec director, albeit I know that he's also taken up a chief exec role at Somerset. You've got a wonderful spread of diversity in all aspects here. I wouldn't say, you know, Jamie Cox as being somebody who was heavily involved and an internet, you know, did he ever play international cricket for Australia? He certainly played for Somerset, and he played for Tasmania for 15, 20 years. So it's good that there's some real expertise in the cricketing world. Jamie Cox also was heavily involved in the MCC quite recently. But also looking at a number of the names here, people who are successful in business, who are going to bring new ideas, who are hopefully well-networked when it comes to potential sponsorship as well. That's really important. Cricket Scotland doesn't have enough sponsorship, for some obvious reasons, as what's happened over the last few years, but also for the fact we don't have enough games, and in order to get games you need sponsors, and in order to get sponsors you need games. There's nobody I would say on that board I know personally, but I do think that there are a number of individuals that are there looking at their backgrounds, their pedigrees, who can, I'm sure, offer value and offer that diversity of thought, both from a race, religious, and gender perspective as well. So I think that that's really important, and something, you know, it's a real reset, and I think that's really exciting. I don't know, Liam, what are your thoughts on it all?
Yeah, more or less mirror your opinion there, to be honest, Pete. Nothing out with new fresh blood from a variety of backgrounds. Hopefully that's going to bring positive action in cricket, and all we really want now, I think, you know, after all of this that's gone on, is just like, can we just play some cricket? Can we just move forward as one? And I think at this time, we seem to have a pretty decent squad of players, and that's male and female, striving forward in the game. And if these people at the helm now can just steer the ship on a steady course, and let's just have a little bit of harmony and play some cricket and get us chatting about things that are happening on the field rather than off the field. And hopefully, like you say, these, like, even people like Trudy, like, you'd like to think she's bound to have good connections in terms of starting discussions about getting touring teams up here and playing more cricket, and increasing the positive interest in the game in Scotland. I think that's the remit for these individuals. But they all seem impressive. They all seem to have good acumen from a variety of backgrounds, so hopefully it works out well. Could do with some more good news, mate, couldn't we?
Yeah, indeed. And obviously at the moment there is a pretty busy calendar of fixtures for both senior squads, in that there is a World T20 that the men are involved in, and there's qualifiers at the start for a World Cup for the women's team as well, but there is not a lot of cricket, international cricket, being currently played in Scotland this summer. I mean, obviously there's been the announcement that the first I forget what it's called now, League Two series is going to be played in Dundee. Well, Brottby Ferry, just to be clear, the Ferry, Scotland, Oman, Namibia. But it would be great if they could pull a rabbit or two out of the hat and get some big games. And by big games, it doesn't have to be Australia, England. Yeah, I'd take the West Indies. I'd take New Zealand. I'd take Bangladesh, whoever, if possible. A few games down the road at Grange or elsewhere, doesn't have to be there. And that's not just from a men's team perspective. From a women's team perspective, we could have a week of some really high quality cricket being played here, really engage the public, to add to all these other positive news stories that are coming out in terms of just the fact that we're getting our house in order. And what's great is there's just a little bit less noise on social media in general about, I mean, obviously we've covered the whole racism scenario, and I'm sure there are still things to play out in that space. I don't doubt that for a second, but in general, noise is dying down in that space, and a lot of what we're hearing in, you know, on social media, and let's not get too obsessed with what goes on Twitter, because you know, it can be a pretty toxic place. What is good is that the a lot of the talks of what's happening on the pitch, a lot of the talk is what's happening in terms of these positive appointments. I know there's another one or two that we're going to talk about a little bit later on as well.
Yes, mate. Yes, agree. I'm just having a look at England's fixtures this summer, Pete. So West Indies are down there, Sri Lanka are there, and then towards the end of summer, the Australians are there. So hopefully Trudy gets on the phone, gets on the blower, and brings some of them up to Grange. Because well, we spoke to Jack Jarvis, didn't he? And quite a lot of the chat he was getting about was the Aussies quite like a look at the Grange and wouldn't mind playing there. So. There we
I think
go.
they
Set
like
set that up.
a night out on George Street. That's what they really like.
Jack's bound to have what's his name? Marnus Labuschagne's number now. Just, you know, drop him a text, drop him a WhatsApp. I'll give him a
I think
voice note.
Marnus is in terrible form at the moment.
I
He's,
know,
I
mate.
think, he'd be a million miles away from cricket if I was him right now. But yeah,
Nah, he's obsessed, isn't he? There's no way
he
out.
is. He
Anyway,
is.
let's talk. I'll touch on Forfs actually. So that's it. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good to see fixtures moving across. So these will be their first crack at kind of list A or first class cricket.
ODI, first ODIs.
ODI, sorry, yeah. I think the sticking point, Pete, was when I played my cricket there was that you hadn't increased the boundary width just quite enough. But obviously they've managed to make amendments to kind of the shape of the ground to increase it on the school side. So there we go.
Okay.
But I look forward to that. Hopefully I'll get down to a game. Wonder if we'll get some media passes, mate. Get us in.
Well, let's see. We still get, do you know what's nice? We get those nice emails that give us a heads up about what's going on, which is an absolute delight. And I'm dead keen, and I think, you know, we've got some grand plans ahead of this summer anyway, in terms of the pod, and maybe not just a pod, but moving forward. But yeah, we're keen to get down there. I know that you and Hoggy will be keen to get down there and to talk about the halcyon days of when you bowled beautifully at the top end of Forfs, and that this guy who's chucking it down for Oman or Namibia or indeed Wattie could never turn it quite as much as you did, or Hoggy talking about the time that he took a Stony Wood Dice attack to pieces at Fort Hill, and how similar it is to Brendan McMullen's 200 that he is undoubtedly going to get later this summer.
Yeah, mate. Well, I want to struggle there. I must admit. I'll maybe have a word on. Show
Yeah.
him how it's done.
In half an hour, a bit like, you know, what Warner used to do with some up and coming spinners. Yeah, that would be lovely.
I'll get a master class out of the boys.
He'll appreciate that.
Yeah. I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah.
Anyway, Pete, let's talk about the fixtures that are currently going on out in
Yeah.
Dubai. Scotland, Canada, and the UAE. Our other presenter, Matthew Parker, kind of scoffed that Canada were back in, but they've shown that they're well capable so far. I think they're 3 from 3 and saw us off quite comfortably, mate.
They really did. They really did that first game. Interesting, because obviously Canada had the benefit of playing the initial game against UAE, and UAE only scored 194, and Canada got that 7 down in the 48th over. So Scotland probably, you know, going into that fixture against Canada, they am I right in thinking we won the toss and batted? Is that right? I think we might well have done.
Let me see if I can find the toss, Pierre. But yeah, we batted first, certainly.
Oh, Canada fielded first. Canada fielded first. Sorry, Canada won the toss and fielded first. And I think we've probably gone in. Look, it's very easy to make excuses and go, well, this team haven't played together since last summer. In truth, I'm not prepared to sit here and say that that's an excuse too much, and these guys won't be saying that as an excuse. They'd probably have thought 2:15. It's a tricky. I know me and you were texting Liam throughout this game. It did look like a sluggish wicket. It did look like a wicket early on that 220, 240 was probably going to be enough. And whenever we tried to up the ante, I know Crossy, Munsey, and Michael Leask, in all three circumstances, when they've tried to up the ante, they've holed out. And I think the reality is, yeah, it's a subpar total. They probably thought it might just be about par because 197 was almost enough on the other day, and we've got a better bowling attack than the UAE. But Canada have come out and demonstrated the fact that it wasn't anywhere near enough, and there was this the cobwebs were undoubtedly there, and that's not it's not ideal. We maybe needed to take a different approach to our batting. I mean, there were some positives. I thought Munsey did bat pretty well, anchored the innings. But again, as he tried to up the ante, he got out. Same with Crossy, as he tried to up the ante, he got out. And Michael Leask at the back end, practically a runnable 40. But again, Leaskey's out with five overs to go. Another five overs of Michael Leask, you maybe even double his score. He's that prolific in those last five overs. And we're putting 250 on the board. And the momentum's in our favor rather than the momentum being in Canada's favor going into that second innings. And it was pretty. The writing was on the wall, I felt, when Canada came out first 10 overs and was, had 70 on the board. I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's kind of my general synopsis on things, Liam. Not an ideal start by any stretch.
Nah, like you say, you can make excuses or you can give explanations to how we've been turned over there. We probably got the poorer conditions with the bat. That's probably fair. Or certainly adjusting to the surface. Let's put it that way. I think it's quite tricky. Even if you look at the run rates of all the players, literally them all, even the lads down the bottom, it shows you how difficult it must have been. Like even Grivo, like 4 from 11 balls at the end. That's like really tricky. Barrows tried to, take the sting out of it. He's a 2 off 15. Andrew Mead, 8 from 23. So it must have been tacky. It must have been difficult. So we
It's
could.
tacky. Yeah, it's tacky. It's difficult. Also, this is a bowling attack, Canada's bowling attack. I don't know the last time we played Canada. And, the benefit to playing in this World Cricket Series has been the fact that we're facing attacks that there's a familiarization over a 4-year period. I know some of these Canadian names are players that we've seen in the past, absolutely. But for a number of our newer members of our squad, these are players they haven't faced before. And so, it's it, we you've got to hit the ground running a little bit better than we did in that first game for sure. But that's not taking no disrespect to Canada because geez, bowling was pretty tidy. That Kalim Sana in particular, I was impressed with when he came back at the end, last three overs. I want to say, did he not bowl like a wicket maiden in the last five overs or something like that? I was like, pretty impressive, back end of the innings. Like 48th, 49th over, I think might have been even like gone for one run or something along those lines. That's impressive. Kirk, who hadn't even bowled in the last game, 7 overs, 2 for 26. That's tidy.
Now you're spot on. It was Sana, the 49th, went for a single run and took a wicket as well. Finished 1 for 25 from his 10. So yeah, obviously a capable. And I think you make a good point there, Pete. And I think that's maybe where Scotland are a bit of a surprise package when they do play against the test playing nations or the bigger teams or whatever you want to call them, top 10, is that they are an unknown quantity and there isn't maybe so much knowledge of their bowling attack or batting attack. And that's maybe where you, like teams like Canada have an advantage coming into the World Cricket League too, because they are a little bit of an unknown quantity. But I think having played these games, they're 3 from 3. They play Scotland. I think it's tomorrow, Pete. So I think Scotland will be looking for revenge. I think they'll be wanting to put a marker down, a statement down. And I think that's kind of the way they approached most of the groups of fixtures last year, was to try and finish 3 from 4 You know what I mean? Okay, anyone can lose on the day, but if we can win the majority, then they'll probably end up back up the top of that league again, hopefully win it again. We'll touch on Andrew Mead, which is a little bit disappointing because obviously he's come in, high hopes, great to see him back in the setup after so long away, and sod's law, he's broken his finger.
Yeah, I mean, that is a real shame for him, particularly as somebody who's got a county contract as well. So hopefully he can get that rested in time for a month from now when the county season starts. But yeah, good to see him back. It was really good. I noticed he's put some posts on social media around that journey, and there was a really good article actually in one of the newspapers. I think Graham McPherson was the author. Good interview with Andrew Mead, where there was a real clear passion and a real clear, oh geez, what a journey that guy's been on. Going down, playing for Warwickshire, getting 100 on debut against Jimmy Anderson a number of years ago, losing his Warwickshire contract, falling out of love with the game, going to Australia, living in Australia, COVID happens, comes back, and then boom, all of a sudden, his enthusiasm for the game's returned, develops game, Saka involvement, gets there, gets his county contract, and back with Scotland. What's great to hear is that Scotland's never left him. That kind of whole scenario of going through that loss of passion for the game, moving down south. We've seen players in the past just like show real no interest and want to play for Scotland again. And actually there's a clear passion that he does want to play for Scotland. And obviously he's pretty gutted about breaking his finger. But he's a fine player and he's got some really great, had some great performances last year in the 50 over comp in England. Admittedly, of course, some of that comp is slightly diminished by players going off to that nonsense competition elsewhere, but they're still good quality players. Andrew Mead faced an entirely full strength Gloucestershire side, for example. And, you know, everyone knows that's a very difficult thing to do. But it's great to see him back. Shame he's broken his finger, but I really, really hope he gets fit, does some good stuff with the county in the counties, and knocks on that door for the T20 World Cup that's coming up as well.
Yes, mate. I totally agree. And I think, like you spoke about actually in the last pod, if one door closes for one person, then it opens for the next, and that gave Charlie Taylor his chance. So he comes and scores 50. 54 red on debut, so
yeah,
gave him a chance, and he's taken it immediately. So
yeah, he really did, and you know, that second game was, I felt, a real good statement comeback by Scotland in general, because they'll have not made any excuses about the fact that it wasn't good enough against Canada. They would not have said for a second, oh, we've not played together, we don't know the conditions, we don't know the opposition. And they've just shown how pissed off they were by going out, rolling the UAE for 132. And then great to see somebody like Charlie Tier, young, but already got some good county championship experience. So he's already playing in a really competitive, high-quality standard of cricket. And, you know, so nothing will faze him when you come in to play for Scotland. Big step up coming from EPL or Western Premier League into Scotland. It's not the same. It's an easier transition if you're coming from a county, no, undoubtedly. And to go and get 54 and kind of anchor that chase, admittedly a small chase, was really good, really impressive, and well supported by Munns and Brandon McMullen as well, who just got out at the end in disappointing circumstances. But the bowling was superb in that second game, was it not?
Yeah, it was. It was. They were on top from the start, and it's like the old adage: if you've got the foot on the throat, then you got to keep it there. And that's what they did. They just kind of strangled them, didn't they? They kind of made it very difficult for them to score. I think Scotland is a unit in the field. You know, they're very young and athletic bunch as well. Good hands, good catchers, and yeah. They made it very difficult for the UAE. One thing I will touch on, Munsey, for me, sometimes seems to have changed his batting tact in some games and goes for like the anchor role, whereas it was really important that he did what he did in this innings and got off to a flyer and got that kind of scoreboard ticking. You know, you're counting down from over 100, now you only need, he got out at 42 down, so you know what I mean, you're only like 90 odd left to chase. And he was destructive. And I thought he was, I thought he's a little bit unlucky as well. I thought it looked like he got LBW. I thought he looked like he managed to get outside the line, but he you play the sweep and you're at your own peril, I suppose, umpires will see you in front of the stumps.
He certainly thought he got outside the line, and I think he even told the umpire that. So I wonder how many demerit points he'll get for that. Yeah, but I've seen him react worse to LBW decisions. That's how we want to see George Munsey play. Particularly, maybe it's even actually when it's against high quality, top tier opponents, I still want him to play that way. You know, I still remember that kind of that shot he played against India in the T20 World Cup that time when he kind of pelted it. He kind of played almost one of these sort of, not a helicopter shot, but I forget exactly what it was. But I think he picked, was it Bumrah or one of the other openers, and just dispatched him. I know we didn't get many runs that day, but I think that's when he plays at his best. And I think when George is able to express himself and feel like there's no shackles on him, I think that's when he plays really well. And I think if we're able to accept that as a team, and have batsmen bat around him with a bit more, churn and a bit more durability, I think that that's effective for the side. So, yeah. And I mean, the bowling, as you say, I thought against UAE, who are going through a tricky patch themselves, I think, UAE just now. They've got some young players from their under-19s stepping up and some older players kind of on the wane a little bit. But I thought it was good to see Safi and Sharif come back with a lot more economical bowling. But what was me most impressive was the two Curry brothers. Brad Curry was getting that ball to swing even late on. I think his dismissal of the number 9, Bhatia, it hooped pretty late and was a really good seed. Scott Curry, even on a sluggish pitch, was showing, I think he bounced one of their players out in particular. And he, again, geez, 8 overs, 2 for 16, really good stuff. And what's good is that I think it's really important that guys like Scott Curry and Brad Curry don't see this as this is a step down from the cricket I've been playing at Hampshire or the cricket I've been playing at Sussex. This is a serious test. If they play at 90%, which I'm sure they won't do, they will look like idiots. And I think we've seen players in the past from counties come with that attitude and fail. And these are the places to learn this lesson. This World Cricket League is important, but at the end of the day, as long as we're in the top four of it, we will go on to the final World Cup qualifier. Now, we want to win it because we want to win things, yeah? But, yeah, in general, pretty positive. At least he got a good run out as well at the end. That was
fantastic. Very good, wasn't it? He's good for that. He is good for that, I must admit. Good whip, good base. If you ever watch Leeske Field, get side on with a base like that. But yeah, good win, and on to the next one, Pete. I see your old buddy, Mr. Hayes, is jetting out early to take up Andrew Mead's spot. I don't think we'll see him after young Charlie Tear did so well, but you never know.
You never know. I thoroughly enjoyed the fact that Cricket Scotland picked a picture of Ollie which was quite remarkable. Given he coaches cricket at George Watson's school, bat and pad together apparently is no longer a thing, because that looked like the biggest hoik shot I've ever seen on a poker. I think we probably won't see him, but I think he was already out there, going out there for the T20, so maybe he's just gotten a bit of an earlier flight. But it shows that there is a degree of depth there, the fact that he wasn't in the original ODI squad and he's going in there. We know as well that Michael Jones, who's obviously missed games for Scotland, given his Durham commitments. Durham are currently in Zimbabwe, which I presume is why he's missing this. He'll become available for the T20 World Cup later in the summer. But there's depth there with the batting, and we know there's depth with the bowling because Brad Wheel hasn't featured in any game so far, for example. And we know he's delivered for Scotland several times over the last few years.
Yeah, mate.
And neither's Josh Davey in the squad. Presumably because he was focusing on preparing for the county season. But yeah.
No, definitely. brings us nicely on. So obviously Scotland will have remaining fixtures, which we'll report back on, and hopefully we can win the remaining two ODIs, which would be a real good return. Pete, will we talk a little bit about our? So we moaned, we asked for a head coach, and we got one.
Yeah.
And I don't think we mentioned getting Doug Watson back, but we certainly talked about how well he did in his summer as Scotland manager or Scotland head coach. Brilliant. Great to see him back. I think that's a brilliant bit of business.
Fantastic bit of business. Very positive. It's this kind of, I know we've kind of smugly talked a lot about these media passes that we had last summer, right? But it's this, when you are in, you know, when you do get that little glimpse behind, you know, into the background, you start to hear things about how somebody's had an impact on us on a squad over a short period of time. And one thing that we heard loud and clear was the impact that Doug Watson had had on the play on the team since taking the reins over for obviously the World Cup qualifier and indeed the T20 European qualifiers. You know, every message was incredibly positive about the impact he's had, the attitude he's got, the way he coaches, just in general how he empowers the players and kind of gets on with the job. There's no kind of sense of I'm the big cheese, I'm high and mighty. There's very much a kind of, I suppose, a real empathetic coaching leader that Doug Watson sort of portrays. And that was really evidenced, you know, you go down to the ground early, you see the way he's training, you see the way he engages with the general public. So to get him permanently is fantastic. The fact that he's off the back of a really successful winter, in inverted commas, in when he's gone back to Auckland, he's won the domestic T20 title. He's reached the final of the Ford Trophy. I think that it's a fantastic appointment. I'd have loved to have seen him be the Gloucestershire coach, in all honesty. But I'm even more delighted he's a Scotland coach. And you know, I think the fact it's again approval for what Cricket Scotland are trying to do out of what has been a really struggling and challenging few years. Doug Watson engaged with the team over last summer. He obviously had a positive experience and he's coming back. That is a ringing endorsement for what's going on across the game in Scotland at the moment, I would say.
Yeah, Pete, as usual, as is always the case, or most always the case, most always? Jeez, mostly the case. I was nodding, or I found myself nodding to everything you were saying there, mate. I know from, you know, when you speak about like a football head coach, you speak about, are they a tracksuit manager? Are they like a shirt and tie, a suit manager? Do they stay away from the players? Do they engage with the players? I think Doug Watson had no alternative other than to do all the work or a lot of the work that he maybe perhaps doesn't do when he's in charge at Auckland. I know me and you saw him returning range balls and rolling them in to, I think it was Steve Gilmore or Muneeb that was throwing deliveries. You know, that side of the game is maybe not what he's used to in Auckland, where he's probably has maybe some more coaches or some more people at his own disposal. So, do you know what? It'd be good to get him on. It'd be good to get him on. I wonder what he'd have to say. But yeah, I think he maybe quite enjoyed that experience. I know he said he enjoyed Edinburgh. He enjoyed living in the capital. So yeah, really keen to get him back involved. And I think it gives the players that little bit of continuity. They've obviously been through a couple of campaigns, a couple of qualifying tournaments with him and done really well, like almost unbelievably well, nearly qualifying for the World Cup in India. So it gives those players continuity, it'll give them that little bit of familiarity, comfort, around about Doug Watson, having him back in the fold. So hopefully it's a long-term appointment and we can get maybe 2 years out of a coach like this, or 3 years out of a coach like this, and try and build something. I think he did speak about the players that he has at his disposal and a crop that are coming through kind of 19s onwards. You'd like to think he will have some type of regional cricket as well to cast an eye over and get the best players playing against the best players and have that competition for places. So, yeah, a real positive appointment. I think it'll be heralded widely around Cricket Scotland and the kind of Cricket Scotland public as a positive appointment, and hopefully he's here to carry on his good work soon. And I think it's April he'll be here, Pete. So get the lads back from Dubai and then hopefully hit the ground running before the fixtures in Broughty Ferry.
Yeah, and if we want an exclusive on halfway up medal, Doug, we're more than happy to stay up overnight if you're currently in New Zealand, and we'll do the interview that way. No problem at all. But no, I think you're absolutely spot on, Liam. It really does feel like it could be a promising summer. It really does. That squad of players from a men's perspective and indeed the women's squad as well, I think are really well positioned just now to take it that next step on. I think I mentioned that in the last pod. Now getting all the pieces in place, in terms of the squad, in terms of the coach. You know, obviously, we've got Steve Snell as well as a performance director. But I think even getting the back order in house, you know, we make a lot of analogies about other sports and things like this on this podcast. When have you ever known a successful, football team who's got a terrible ownership and a really bad shambolic board structure? I appreciate, you know, you might get the odd situation at Barcelona, for example, or something like that. But in general, an organization that's tidy in the back end is normally delivering on the field. So I really hope that, this extra piece of the jigsaw is the final piece of the jigsaw for the season ahead.
Hear, hear, mate. Hear, hear. Well, that brings us to the end of our pod today, mate. Thank you very much for jumping on and getting this done. And we'll get number 50. We'll get that final single on the board, Pierre, dashing through to get our half century.
Yeah. And then the scorer won't put it in the book. So we'll have to keep doing 50 over and over again. Hopefully we'll get Hoggy on for that, because he's a lot more aware of what it's like to get 50s than me and you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And few interesting points maybe to put between you and Hogg and the next pod that have been coming up on our WhatsApp lately. All right.
Well, yeah, we've been debating. I think this is potentially the best squad that we've ever had. He is adamant it isn't. So watch this space for a big debate ahead. And of course, the season's coming up as well, Liam. There's a lot of stuff to talk about as well. I'm quite excited about that. I know that you're going to have to do a bit more of the role that I've been doing, which is sitting back watching cricket rather than playing it this year. So, we've got a lot to talk about there. And there's been a lot of movement, I know, in domestic circles around certain players.
There we go. There we go, sports fans. Lots to talk about. Hey, thanks very much, mate.
Cheers, mate. See you
soon.
Cheers,
bud. Bye.